Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy connecting the light. My guest today is Bill Sweet, who tells me that he has always been interested in paranormal phenomena, including the spiritual phenomena of prayer. And through meeting the founders of Spindrift Inc., that is Bruce and John Klingbeil, Bill began to grasp new ways of applying consciousness research to religion and science. And I think it's correct to say that as a result of that, he has written a book called A Journey into Prayer, Pioneers of Prayer in the Laboratory, Agents of Science or Satan. So it sounds as though we're going to have a very interesting program here. Welcome, Bill. Can I hear you?
Can I hear me? And I can hear you, and I'll probably be hearing some of your listeners if I'm really good at this, right? That'd be really perceptive. Yes,
right.
The title of the book, it tells a lot about what the story of Spindrift is. A Journey into Prayer, that usually gets people's attention, but they're a little surprised to find out that it's not so much, hardly at all, a religious standpoint, it's the standpoint of what science does by looking into prayer. And then the subtitle is Pioneers of Prayer in the Laboratory. The Spindrift people took people in the laboratory from various backgrounds and denominations and tested their prayers. And the third title, Agents of Science or Satan. Well, that's sort of a theme that runs throughout the history of our Spindrift group, too. A lot of people were offended by mixing religion and science and parapsychology together and the idea of testing people. And so some people thought we were doing science, but a lot of people thought we were satanic by doing that. So all those things mixed together tells you what the book is about.
Yes. I believe you... Well, in fact, I don't believe. I know that you've told me that you were the president of Spindrift for 4 years, so you were obviously very much involved in the research they carried out.
I was so fortunate to meet them because, as you said in your introduction, I've always been interested in paranormal things and spiritual things, and here are these two fellows who... are the founders of Spindrift, Bruce and John Klingbeil. By profession, they were professional Christian Science practitioners. If you know what a practitioner is, they pray for people. And they had a lot of experience with helping people with prayer, and also they had a scientific bent on top of that. So they started the Spindrift organization. And I just happened to find out about them, and I couldn't believe it. They were right near me. Of all the places in the world, they were right near me. So I was very fortunate.
Yes. Oh, well, it was. I suspect it was meant to be.
I guess.
So... was the purpose of it to prove it one way or the other, in other words, for or against it, or did they have a totally open mind?
It's a very large question you're asking. Actually, part of the answer to that is that Bruce and John Klingbeil, working with people, noticed a shift going on in society that is pretty obvious, but they noticed it way back in the 60s and 70s, that generally speaking, ever since World War II, there's been a gradual change from a subconscious mindset in our culture from a religious basis to a scientific basis. Now, there's nothing exactly wrong in that, but what happens is that there's all this doubt and subconscious questioning and a lot of things psychically and spiritually just kind of get undermined in our culture because there's just no believing anything unless you can show it scientifically. As practitioners, it was pretty obvious when somebody didn't get a healing or when prayer failed or prayers were unanswered. That's not a no-brainer. But what they found through observation and just being aware is that more and more people were getting healings when they got their answers to prayer, but they would be grateful for the moment, but let a couple of weeks go by and that wore off and they forgot they had a healing or had an amazing experience through spiritual experience or through prayer, or they would dismiss it through, it had to be the placebo effect, or I wasn't that bad off anyway, or I would have gotten well without prayer. And so all these things came in. So Bruce and John started thinking, well, society is going to find out a lot of things about thought in the future. And on top of that, the spiritual things here are being doubted. What's happened to these people that they worked with, and then suddenly they forgot they had these traumatic experience? What's wiping all this out of their minds? And they came to the conclusion that it was a combination of our changing culture, from having more of a scientific basis and more of a skeptical basis, to also the idea that and this is an additional thing they researched that we can get into a little bit, that taking a cue from Sigmund Freud, that the defense mechanisms of the mind also play along with this cultural shift, and the defense mechanisms of our minds come right in, and they also add doubt to the situation, because when people start looking at the truth that there actually is occasionally a scientific occasion when prayer works or when a paranormal effect happens to somebody, that when you look at it too closely, the defense mechanisms want to wipe that out of us, because it's okay if we think about these things and believe these things, but when we start trying to prove them and actually find out there's something to them, the defense mechanisms say, well, this is a waste of time. We've got to keep people in their normal lives. They can't think about this stuff too seriously. They can't look for the reality of it, because defense mechanisms, for whatever reasons, want to keep us in a normal, so-called normal strand of life where we pay our bills and take care of our family and do our routines and not get off into these crazy areas too extremely.
Yeah.
And so they started testing prayer to find subtle ways of showing that actually something happens in prayer, because they thought this would be, number one, important for society to see if there is something in prayer, and number two, that with the progress that will be made shortly, I would think, and through quantum physics and other things, that there is something to all this consciousness stuff after all, that there has to be a parallel spiritual explanation for things. It just can't all be using consciousness and the quantum mind to manipulate things.
Right. Now, when you were carrying out your research, did you find that where people experience healing, it was in part due to a very strong belief in God?
This is an interesting thing, too. The steps that have to be taken before you can get to this argument of, is there a God, or should you pray to a God, is actually down the line research. Of course, myself and the people at Spindrift have a precondition or pre-bias that we believe in God. Does everyone have to do that? When we brought people in the laboratory from different backgrounds, we didn't tell them how to pray or what they had to believe. We just told them that most of the situations they prayed for had to do with plants that had something a little amiss. Either the plants had too little water, or too much water, too much ultraviolet rays, or too much interference from something in the soil that was hindering its growth, and they would pray for it, but they didn't exactly know what was wrong with the plant. They just knew it had a problem. We didn't tell them what the problem was. And we would compare that against the control group plant, but we didn't tell them how to pray. We had people, for instance, the Buddhists don't have a God they pray to, and we had some meditators that didn't have a God to pray to. To get to your, so it, what we're looking for is a result. Later on, it would be interesting to get into this idea, is there a God? And there is a way to inductively show that there must be a principle or a God or a divine cause behind things. I could briefly tell you what that is. It's kind of complex, but the idea is that when you produce order from your prayer or from your meditation, what you're showing there is, in fact, an ordered effect. So what causes this order effect? Our mind doesn't cause that order effect, and there's a reason why. A person praying doesn't know the norms at different intervals of growth and recovery for a plant or a situation. But some divine intelligence out there knows what the plants needed in a normal moment. They may need more of this, less of this, they need to go sideways. These norms are reached, and when a prayer brings a result that reaches these norms, you have what we would call a modest spiritual healing of the plant. But the person praying, usually, and for sure the researchers doing, people have really done the experiments a number of times, knows exactly what the plants do, but our mind can't produce these intervals and these norms being reached. So we inductively think from that in back of our affirmations that we do in prayer, however we do it, is the affirmation that there's a divine principle or God presence that is bringing back to normal, toward the norms, what is needed for the plants. So that way we can just inductively conclude that there is a God behind it, but we can't prove it. It's just something you come back to. Just like if you do a bunch of mathematical problems, you conclude that there's some principle mathematics behind it. You can't see the principle, but you do enough of them, there must be a principle in mathematics.
Right. Now, I have read, and I'm sure with your interest you're aware of this, of experiments where researchers have actually wired up plants to see the reactions that they have to the spoken voice. It could be prayer, in as much as you speak to them nicely and give them a loving feeling, or I've actually seen them shouted at as though somebody's angry with them, and they found different types of responses. Now, are you aware of that, and how does that relate to what you've done?
Well, these responses are very interesting. If I just may zero in on that just a little bit. There
yes.
are multiple effects that are thought occasions in various experiments and in other people's experiments. I'll tell you one of the exciting things. I think at some time in the future there's going to be so many people doing experiments that the skeptics are going to have too many people to go after. So many people are showing these effects, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to that day. But what is a distinction we can make here and related to your question? Spindrift has done a number of experiments, and the founders of Spindrift had to come up with a premise of how to present prayer so that it looked like there actually something was being measured. And they came up with two styles of prayer that produce two distinct effects. The first style of prayer, Bruce and John Klingbeil, who founded Spindrift, they called this first style of prayer goal-directed prayer. Goal-directed prayer is, I suppose your listeners have been familiar with the term petitionary prayer. Are you familiar with that term?
Yes.
Petitionary prayer? It's when you ask for something specific. You petition a result?
Yes.
That's petitionary prayer, and that would be
goal-directed prayer.
And what we found with petitionary prayer is that it often misses the mark of what's needed in a situation. It's a very effective prayer, and also a lot of people, when they intend something or they wish something, or they're not even praying, but they're using some other mental mechanism to produce a result, they are, without knowing it, using a form of goal-directed prayer because they're shooting for a goal. But what is happening there is that, in fact, the human ego and the subconscious mind get together and they work in the person to determine what is thought to be best for the result. So it isn't necessarily tied into a divine result. That can push a system beyond the organism we're praying for, beyond what it needs, below what it needs. It may completely manipulate it. Yeah, psychic effect is happening, but what's happening often with goal-directed prayer is you're not getting the result that's best for the organism. So even though Jesus Christ says in the Bible, ask and ye shall receive, that has to be within the framework of what is spiritually best for the situation. In our culture, we just read that first part, ask and receive, like in The Secret. You know, get wealthy, get what you want, get all your health, find the right mate, everybody wins the lottery, on and on. This is a materialistic way of looking at the spiritual. Now, sometimes goal-directed prayer, petitionary prayer does work, but often it gets off into these other areas, and that's where you get all these other effects you're talking about, multiple effects. Sometimes they're right effects, and sometimes they're wrong effects. The Klingbeils were able to contrast petitionary prayer, goal-directed prayer, with a second type of prayer that they designated non-goal-directed prayer. And with non-goal-directed prayer, what one is trying to do there is to sidestep the human ego and the human wants and desires and pray for what is best in the situation. Thy will be done, not my will be done.
This is
a higher standpoint of prayer. And in this type of prayer, when it is effective, you reach the norms for the situation. You bring order to a situation that wasn't there before. And what that does is it harmonizes the situation.
Yeah.
And there you can conclude after the result of prayer that something actually has happened that is both wonderful to witness and suggest a divine intelligence operating on behalf of the person praying and the person receiving the prayer.
Yeah.
So you have those two styles of prayer.
Yes. Now, you mentioned the secret there. How does that fit in with your own conclusions? I mean, do you agree basically with what they say?
I agree with what they're saying, but I would have to say that the reason that is so popular is the spirituality in the secret goes along with our culture so much that it isn't hard for anybody to buy into it. In other words, the secret is telling you you can have anything you want. It's very, generally speaking, with few exceptions, I've seen the DVD and read the book. I'm going to see the DVD again. And there's wonderful things there, don't get me wrong. But it is sort of a Western, go out and get what you want. You can have anything. Make your goals and ask and you shall receive. It's very culturally, materially based spirituality. And even though that sounds like a criticism, it does work. It does work. But well, we're mistaken to think often when we pray that way and get psychic results that way that it has a tie-in with the divine, because the divine has a completely different agenda for us than what we think we want all the time. That's what was so wonderful about that movie, Bruce Almighty. Did you see that?
I did, yes. Enjoyed it.
Well, as you see, when he became God at first, for a long time there, he was just doing his own goal-directed results, and he was also answering everybody's prayers in a goal-directed way, and it caused chaos.
Yes.
But he learned that that's not the way you answer prayers. You have to answer prayers from the God point of view of what is best, and you can't hurt other people in the process. For instance, so a lot of people pray, as you know, and I know, and I have friends tell me this, and I'm so startled that they tell me this. They pray for one basketball team or football team to beat another.
Yeah.
Or they pray for that God gives them some right numbers to win the lottery. Well, that means everybody else will lose the lottery. And it's a misconception of what holy prayer is, or thy will be done prayer. It's just goal direction. You're just making God into a genie that answers your wishes.
Yes.
Now, those wishes can be answered, but it's cut from the field of consciousness, but not from the higher divine consciousness. So you got to be careful what you ask for, because you'll get it. If it's right or wrong, you'll get it.
Yes. Now, there is a spiritual belief that we are affected by what is called karma. And let me put an example to you, that if, say, I was ill and I prayed to be healed, if it was my karma to experience that illness, then I wouldn't get an answer to that prayer in the way that I meant. Now, does that appeal to you, that idea, or do you accept it?
I would put it another way.
I think
that there's a better way to explain that. By the way, if people are interested in reading about questions like you're talking about, they can go to our website. It's www.spindriftresearch.org, spindriftresearch.org. The thing about it is, if you took 10 people with the same problem, let's say you had 10 people with a tumor, I'm just throwing that out.
Yes.
According to what I understand from my religious background, my experience in talking to healers and talking to everybody, that even though medically, I guess they would probably all be diagnosed as having the same problem, if somebody was going to approach assisting that problem with prayer or spiritual thought, the reason that the people have it would be a different than the medical reason, in that the 10 people would have it for 10 different reasons or 10 different combinations of reasons. So there's no formula. They all have this thing. It could be this karma thing. It could be that there's inheritance. They've had generation of fear of people. Have had tumors in every generation, and so I've got it too, and you've got that subconscious fear in you. It could be for innumerable reasons. And so you have to uncover what prayer has to uncover, rather, the Christ, the truth, the love that you're expressing in prayer has to uncover what is causing you to have that problem at that time. So the answer to your question is that there's no formula why somebody has the problem, but it could be for that reason, because there are things that we do that come back to haunt us. I can think of an example that I just heard about 2 days ago from somebody who is not getting a spiritual healing, and you know, I recommended they just forget about it and go to the doctor because they just made no progress. But then here's the thing about them. They've been basically they got a lot of credit card debt, and they've got debt, and they spend and everything. So what does that have to do with anything? Well, the point is that in that part of their life is unmanageable. They haven't shown that they were good stewards of taking care of their personal life. And then over on the other hand, they're asking for this rather dramatic spiritual healing they want. But it's like they didn't have the background underneath them to support it because they can't manage their life. And here they're asking for this big thing. They should learn how to manage their life, and that may set them up then to have a spiritual healing. But since that's such a mess, their personal life, they should still have it taken care of in another way because they haven't demonstrated harmony in one part of their life, but they're asking for this huge harmony in the other part of their life.
I can imagine that you could apply that to someone who is a heavy smoker who got lung cancer and wanted to be healed but wouldn't give up smoking.
Excellent. Can I use that example? It's a beautiful example.
Yes.
I always like Rodney Dangerfield's line. Rodney Dangerfield said that he had to take up smoking in order to give up chewing gum.
I do as well. Oh, dear me. Now, let's come back to the Spindrift experiments here. How did you find the difference in results was according to the type of people doing the prayers? Because I know that you had Baptists, Catholics, Zen meditators, Jewish folks, Hindus, and so on. Now, was there a difference according to their background beliefs?
Well, maybe somebody will come up with an alternate explanation of what happened to us, but when we started out, I suppose we had some pre-guesses of what would happen, you know, when you test somebody from a Jewish background versus a Baptist background versus Seventh-day Adventist versus go on and on, and our own background, Christian Science. And we thought there would be somehow differences. But what we found, you could say it was a good thing, was that the spiritual results and the goal-directed results fell more along the lines of how a person nurtured their consciousness with spiritual qualities. In other words, it had more. When people really did get good results from different backgrounds, they already seemed to have more of a natural and or developed subconscious mind that was full of spiritual qualities of life, truth, and love, and empathy, and were able to identify with the subject they were praying for rather than, give me this, give me that, I ask for this to happen. And so it has to do more with, and this is the point I guess I should really get into, it's a very important word at Spindrift, quality. It has to do with the quality of the thought. There's the more quality, and this word quality is gone into quite a bit at Spindrift, the more you understand this quality as the Christ, as the truth, as the power of good in your consciousness, and you actually have it, and you live it, that is more indicative of how you are prepared to pray properly than your denomination. So that was kind of a surprising finding.
I mean, personally, I would have thought, say, a group like the Buddhists, who I tend to feel have a very deep spiritual understanding, would come out very favorable in your research.
It's true. Not all of them, but yes, a heavy amount of them do. But it's a funny thing. I might add, too, that when you test people, you have to test them over a long period of time. You just can't do one test. Our tests are done 20 to 30 times before you actually get a good reading, because along the way you're going to have some results that are unreadable or don't show anything, and then you have to have other results that are heavily indicative of, are you praying in a goal-directed way or a non-goal-directed pray? I'll tell you something that's kind of, I never was able to overcome myself, using myself as a guinea pig here. When I would participate in the Spindrift test, it almost became a habit. If I would pray for a test the first time or the second time, I would get good spiritual, non-goal-directed, thy will be done results. But then after that, after the third or fourth time, if I took another test and the day went on or something, then I would start getting into rote, repeating words, and thinking the same way. and then my results would go the other way. So there's something to having fresh, spontaneous, inspirational thoughts, and then after a while you start, say, oh, that worked, now I'll go back to that. Then you're getting away from the original thinking to this repeatable thinking, and you have to be careful of that. In fact, Jesus Christ said, watch out for vain repetitions. It's something in the Bible that's very important. We have to make sure that we're not just rehearsing the same words and combination of words over and over again. That knocks out the effectiveness of prayer quite a bit.
I can see that quite clearly, say, for people with a Christian belief who are in the habit of repeating the Lord's Prayer. When it loses its energy that goes with it, or love, or whatever you like to call it, it just goes flat, doesn't it?
I like that. It loses its energy. I like that. I like that expression. It loses its energy. Now, that's what we have to be careful of. And it's easy to do. I know we all like to rely on what we already have memorized in our head, but that works against us.
Now, say that the quality, and you use this word, in human thought produces order. So explain what you mean by that.
Well, I'd be happy to. It's one of my favorite subjects.
Good.
In our country, or the United States anyway, every law is backed up by force. If you got a traffic ticket, for example, it's backed up by a force. You know, we can enforce it. The Spindrift people, Bruce and John Klingbeil and the rest of us, were wondering if we could find ways to interpret some of the laws that give force to prayer. And along this way, we began noticing that the law of order provides patterns to look at. So what backs up patterns of order is the force of order. So we started looking into this force of order that's behind creation, behind things. It's a metaphysical force that we can't see, but we know it's there because we see order. We assume the force of order must be there and back of everything because we see the patterns of order in the universe and the creation and in our experiences. So when we are able to see this order come about as a result of prayer, even if it's subtle changes, it's a move toward order, what we have done to the situation is increase the quality of the situation. Quality can be thought of as a move toward order and more harmony. And that's the evidence we look for in experiments. And we can see those things. For example, if you took one of our tests, for example, if an organism being tested, some kind of grass seed or mung bean or whatever we're praying for, has been deviated from order because it has some kind of stress on it, too much food or too much water, whatever it is, and then prayer helps that organism come back toward its norm, towards what is better for it. The quality thought that the person praying has conveyed something that affirms within the organism its native order, and that native order is an indication to us that it's getting back to its quality state of being. And that tells us something. That's a measurable phenomenon. So quality is something that makes all of us feel real good. We can't quite define quality. But interestingly enough, if any of you have read the book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, remember that book from way back when?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, the way that the word quality is used in that book is in line with how we use the word quality at Spindrift. It's quality is something that you can't put your finger on, but you know what it is and you know when it's missing. We all know the difference between junk food and a gourmet meal. It's a qualitative difference.
Yes.
And we know by the increased sense of order in a situation that the quality of the situation has improved. We can relate that to anything in our work, in our music, in our habits. We certainly know, too, that in prayer, if we are happier with our result after prayer, we have gone up a notch in quality. Have you ever heard of Heresy's phenomenalistic theory?
No.
Yeah, I read about this in the footnotes in my book. It's a theory that when a person attains a level of quality, what they call a manifold, and it's a word I don't quite understand, I have to look at it, but I think it's like the word platform. You reach a plateau or something, a quality. When you are aware of that level of quality, you don't go below it. For instance, if you buy a new car, the next car you get will either be a car of similar quality or up. You won't go backwards.
Yeah.
If you buy a new house, if you can help it, you won't go down. You'll get a similar house or a little bigger house. In the sense that you hope it has quality. There's a natural instinct in us to desire quality. And if we can apply that to our prayers, too, we'll be going a long way towards seeing how effective prayer works when it works.
Yes, yeah.
It's the desire for more order,
yeah.
And there's nothing bad about that. Not a thing bad about that.
No. Well, you've come to the point I want to make now, talking of something bad. Most people think of prayer as only doing good, but understand the Klingbeil's isolated bad effects from prayer too. Can you tell us about that?
Well, this is a hot topic too, and a lot of people there's an irony here that a lot of people upset with us overall, but then some people were very upset that we were saying prayer had a bad side too, and they would pray to stop Spindrift from working, so they were demonstrating the very point we were trying to present.
Yeah.
What an irony!
Yeah.
You know, talking about karma, creating your own karma. Well, I'll just give you an example. For example, with the gold director, sometimes this is unintentional evil, but a number of people we tested who prayed with goals in mind actually did harm to the organisms. They didn't mean to, but since they were praying amiss, they were praying in an incorrect way, they were praying for the organism to recover in a certain way. They thought, I want this to happen to it and that to happen to it, and it turned out that what they thought should happen to the plant was not in the best interest of the plant. It actually wrecked the plant. That's unintentional harm. But we have people that pray intentionally. Here's what happened just this. We're talking, you and I, and we just had August and July 2008, and there was a group of evangelical Christians, and it was all over the news, who purposely prayed so that there were torrential rains that would fall on Barack Obama's outdoor acceptance speech for President of the United States.
Yes.
Did you hear about that?
No, I'm unaware of that one.
Well, it's on the Internet, and it happens to be a fact. And so it's a very interesting thing. I guess they were doing evil in the name of good, and sometimes people do that. Their highest sense of good is evil. And it sounds like a joke, praying for rain, but they actually prayed that the whole thing in the sky would come down on Barack Obama. So there are examples of that. Of course, we have other examples of that from the terrorists. I'm not talking about the good Muslims. I'm talking about the terroristic Muslims. They pray every day for decades to destroy, and destroy. And we saw evidence of that, certainly, on 9/11.
Yeah.
So that's negative prayer. And what we studied at Spindrift, where we would have some people who were psychics and things, you know, they would see what damage they could do, and they could do damage to things.
Would that partly
It's a starry state of affairs, but it shows you what happens when you have lack of quality, and when you submit yourself to goals rather than to thy will be done. Thy will be done prevents that from happening, by the way.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting subject, so we have to be careful because people laugh at prayer, and I think people laugh on the idea of negative prayer and evil prayer, but I don't think we should laugh at it. There's evidence for it, and certainly if people watch the news, they can see how powerful negative prayer is.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm tempted
to say, Bill, that I think possibly where prayer can have notable effects, say, on plants, would you necessarily expect it to have the same effect on people?
The reason that Bruce and John Klingbeil chose to pray for plants versus people in a scientific setting was, first of all, we didn't have a clinic of our own. You know, it was expensive as heck. Everything came out of Spindrift was out of our pockets. But another thing was we had the premise that we wanted to make things as simple as possible so that we could find a way to measure things. The prayer tests that are being done today on people are very good tests, but they are all over the place in results. They're just you know, one test works, another one doesn't. It gets peer-reviewed and it gets passed, and then somebody comes along and says, oh, we made a mistake in the data. Very complex. We're trying to make things as simple as possible. I think that we assume that people could make the leap that if 2 times 2 is 4, like when you pray for a simple plant, that maybe 22 times 22 gives you a bigger number, bigger result. We would hope people could make that. We were sort of looking for people to make that very point. In other words, if people who are on the fence or people who haven't paid attention before see subtle results in modest tests that show a phenomenon is happening, then they say, well, maybe I can apply this to other situations. In fact, I'd like to give you an example. I just thought of this. We had a woman who took some tests, and she was very interested in seeing how her prayers are doing. She was from some very conservative background, I think kind of a fundamentalist background, but not quite, semi-fundamentals. And at the time, she also had some spinal condition that had been operated on several times, but it was something she had to live with because it could not be fully cured. And after she got a series of results on the Spindrift test, she's just on her own. We didn't even mention this. Just on her own, she made the jump that, well, if my prayers can do this for plants, I wonder what these prayers can do for my back condition. And I don't know if she got somebody to pray for her, but I know she did a lot of praying for herself, and she got cured of this back condition because of that leap she made in logic from a small situation to a larger situation applying to herself.
Yes.
People have to come to this, and they can read about how the research happened in my book by turning into prayer. It's all there.
Yes. Now, one might think that where you've carried out your research with the Catholics and other people of different beliefs, that if you did the same thing where atheists were concerned, you would get different results, perhaps more negative. Would there be any truth in that thinking?
We've only tested 2 atheists.
Yeah.
And they didn't get any results.
Right.
But I think if we would test more, we would find, and this is something that will happen, I think, that they would at least get goal-directed results, because if they actually have a goal in mind, you know, you don't have to be a believer to have a goal in mind. In fact, I have one friend, I don't know why he hasn't showed up, he's an atheist, over and over again, he says, well, if I ever take your test, I'm just going to assume that I can get that plan to do what I want through my mental manipulation. In other words, he has some belief in the psychic things, but no God or anything like that. Well, that's fine. I do think that they would at least get that result. On the other hand, it would be a big surprise to everybody to find that maybe, and it's a possibility, that some people are naturally spiritual and they don't even know it. They can't acknowledge it. So there might be atheists around there that actually are very spiritually minded, and they should believe in God because they have the spiritual intuition to do it, but they just don't do it. Just like you have probably today, I've been a musician, I can tell you it's true, you probably have people who are walking around who are Beethovens and Mozarts right now, but they just don't know it. They just have never gotten into music, but they probably have been given that special gift. And there are a lot of gifted people walking around and they don't know they are because they've never tried to develop it. So it's a very interesting subject, and it can go many ways, but I don't think it would necessarily be negative unless we ask them to be negative. I think that in the case of the one atheist we tested, the person told us afterwards that they actually didn't do anything. They thought they could sit there and the meter would jump around and they'd go, aha, see your machinery did that, but I actually didn't do anything. There was something wrong with your machinery. But when it showed no result, it was very surprising.
Yeah.
We were very surprised because that's exactly what happened. They actually didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Then the other one tried to do something. And, of course, we've had, as I say, too, we've had very strong believers, including a minister for some reason, that got no results. It's a very strange thing. Some people pray, but sometimes they can't convey it to the object out there, or they have a hard time conceiving exactly what they're praying for. But if enough tests are done, we're just trying to show that an effect is happening. And then you raise the idea that these things should seriously be investigated, prayer should be investigated seriously, because these results show that there is such a thing as a psychic effect at a distance, and spiritually psychic effects are the highest effects. I mean, we can assume that, we can assume that much. They're being the most order.
Yeah. Now, Bill, I must ask you about the experiments, I suppose you would call them, when you placed healers and volunteers in a Faraday cage. What were you trying to find out by doing that?
My dream is to build a house in a Faraday cage. I don't know if I can do it someday. I hope to do it someday. Basically, being in ham radio and being in laboratory testing and everything, you'll find that your top electronic laboratories around the country and different labs, they put all their equipment inside what's called a Faraday cage. It's a cage made of lead or copper. And what it does, it knocks out all the man-made radiation, satellite signals, microwaves, radio, television, cellular telephone, which is all just permeates everybody. And it when you're inside of it, what you're doing is getting whatever radiation is inside that cage, it's just natural radiation. I don't know exactly how to put that. It would just be the radiation which is coming from what's inside the cage, I guess. But what you are having in there is an atmosphere that is closer to the way the world was 150 years ago before we were transmitting signals over the air.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting feeling to be inside of a Faraday cage. If anybody has ever gone on a cave tour underground, it's the same thing. A cave will knock out radiation, too. It's a wonderful feeling of isolation. It actually is uncomfortable at first because we're not used to it. You know, we're just used to being shot through with radiation from radio frequency signals all the time. And what that would do for a healer, we feel, is that it brings more peace of mind, stillness, which imitates a spiritual stillness. It brings more of a meditative state that is conducive to the person being able to convey a more effective prayer. We have not actually been able to prove this point, but I can say, maybe it's the placebo effect or not, but I can tell you it's a wonderful thing to put healers inside of a Faraday cage. They seem to get to that state of mind that brings effective results quicker.
Yeah.
Seems to be. Now, there's something you can't measure because it's not a formula. But
right.
I would recommend that people sometimes step inside of a Faraday cage and see how they like it. I think they'll say, gee, maybe this is like the world was before our world was covered with radio signals. I like it. It's a much more natural state. Where can you go today to get away from radio signals?
Well, I was just going to mention that. I believe most of the astronauts that have gone up, say, on the flights to the moon have experienced a sense of that type of isolation when they've been outside of the electromagnetic energies of the Earth. So would you say that was comparable?
I didn't know that. How fascinating. You actually heard something about that?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I would say it's comparable.
Yes. Of course it's not.
They're just getting natural radiation out there rather than man-made radiation. And it's that's fascinating. I didn't know that. That's pretty exciting.
Yes,
so maybe
you know.
When we go to other planets and go into outer space, we'll experience more of a spiritual state of mind by default because we'll be away from this radiation business.
Yes, yes. Well, obviously, I suppose unless we have the opportunity to go into a Faraday cage, the average person would have no idea the effect of all these other types of radiation that are passing through them.
And not only that, being a musician and an appreciator of quality in music and entertainment, I have had the opportunity of being inside a Faraday cage listening to music.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I'm telling you that I haven't been in it yet, but a friend of mine knows of a recording studio that's the whole recording studio is built inside of a Faraday cage. I would guess, my best guess would the music recorded in that studio would have more quality on a CD than another CD recorded in some other studio, just for that one reason.
Interesting thought, yeah.
it's really cool. So that's one of the things we looked into, and that's something that isolation is a big topic, by the way. We need to really zero in and get our thoughts cleaned up so that we have a clear channel to whomever we are praying for. In our case, it would be God or however person is tuning in. And you were asking me about the secret earlier, about the secret. Well, I'd like to tell you what Spindrift thinks is the real secret. Would you like to hear that?
Oh, by all means, yes.
We think the real secret is this. Prayer to be holy has to be clear, has to be in secret. Prayers have to be secret in our own thought system. They have to be secret so they resonate in our individual identity. That way we will be less confused by the noise of the material world and the radiation around us. With quieter thoughts, we will be more alert to ourselves as spiritual individuals. Jesus Christ said, quote, "When you pray, go into a closet and shut the door. When the Father sees you praying in secret, he will reward you." That closet is the secret of prayer. It's the secret place. You shut the door behind you and you pray in secret. That's what we feel is the real secret.
I can see the point of it, definitely, because I guess you move from one state of consciousness to a higher one because there are no outer distractions.
Precisely. And I liked your outer space analogy, too. That was just outstanding.
Right, let me ask you a question. Time's shooting on here. We're having a very interesting conversation. What do you see as the future for consciousness and parapsychology research?
Well, this would be into a whole other topic here. By the way, again, my book is A Journey into Prayer by Bill Sweet, and you can see links to it on Amazon and also through our website and things. But what I want to say is the book covers in depth the goal-directed prayer and non-goal-directed prayer, how it works and how it can help you pray better. But the third discovery of Spindrift that has not really come into being yet and will be part of the future of consciousness research will be this idea of how defense mechanisms work to shut down paranormal reality. And it relates to your question. What we see from our experiences at Spindrift, and when you read the story of Spindrift in the book, you'll see this. It seems like there are so many hurdles to get past before you can have a breakthrough. Or actually, you'll have a breakthrough, but you have hurdles to get past showing the breakthrough. Because there's parts of our collective consciousness that want to keep everything in the status quo, and the defense mechanisms collaborate with that. They don't want us to get too much into this stuff. They don't mind us playing with it as a toy thing, but they actually research and to prove that there are some truths that are paranormal, including the power of prayer, the defense mechanisms will work with other aspects of consciousness to disprove or cancel or shut down the progress. So I see, based on what Spindrift has experienced as a group, that it's very odd. You're going to have these peak experiences shown in the laboratory, but at the same time, the grant monies will be cut. People looking at these things will lose their jobs. People won't be able to afford to do this anymore. And it's very ironic. You would think the opposite would happen. It sort of parallels. Maybe this will change now because of the oil problem, but it sort of, you know, we could have had this alternative energy for our cars a long time ago, but every time somebody works on something, they get shut down.
Yes, indeed, yes.
And it's like the technology is there. It isn't in the pie in the sky. These things are possible.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
But it's almost like you were not being allowed by some force to have this breakthrough. So what I see is the future. It can go in, you know, as you know, there's an innumerable scenarios for the future. In fact, the last line in my book is the future remains invisible. You know, we don't know what the future is. That's the last line in my book. The future remains invisible. We hope that parapsychology, consciousness research, spirituality research, forgiveness research, and the like will be taken seriously, and more scientists will be allowed to look into these things because it will be what will save the planet. But again, a lot of people are not really interested in saving the planet. They're interested in exploiting the planet on a short-term basis. You know, that's how you can make the most money, et cetera. And there's no sense of, well, we're going to ruin the future. Some people don't care if they ruin the future.
No, they're not.
They're only interested in what can be done right now. And again, that's another fault of goal-directed prayer, asking for things. A lot of times we ask for things, and then we get our answer, and we're very happy with it. But later on, those things we ask for caused us more trouble, and we would have been happy if we didn't get them in retrospect.
Yeah. You know, somebody, if you had a number of people all praying for the same thing, would you say that the chances of achieving what they want progresses exponentially by numbers?
I would say that if you did experiments like that, they would work the first few times and then they would stop working. Because as soon as you show a pattern of success, then the defense mechanisms will come in and blow it up. They don't care if you have a few successes, but if you actually start showing these things are real, then that would stop working. In other words, you will have a few experiments like that where you have a bunch of thousands of people praying and doing things together. But if it actually starts working, and it has worked in some cases with weather, et cetera, after that it'll stop working or it'll cause some other situation, unpredictable situation to happen, and it'll be less powerful, and then we'll have to go on to another experiment. In other words, it almost is as if success breeds failure. It's very strange, but this seems to be the way collective consciousness works in the paranormal area. It's very strange.
Yeah.
You'll meet people that have extraordinary experiences through either a psychic way or a spiritual way, and then a few years go by and they don't have any more of these experiences, and so they start making them up, and because they sort of have to, they feel like they're losing their credibility, so they make up experiences. You cannot believe the number of people I've met who have had tremendous experiences, and then they have to go off, and since they want to write about it and talk about it, they just can't say, well, I didn't have them anymore, because they just start making up their experiences after that. I'm sure you talk to people like that, too. It's just a funny thing. By the way, I might throw in, just as a sidelight, that the new X-Files movie, I want to believe, have you seen that yet?
No, I haven't, no.
Fantastic. It really kind of shows how psychic phenomena works when it does work within a context.
Yeah.
That's a tremendous movie.
I should look forward to that.
There were only three people in the theater when I was there. I don't know why, but maybe it's a little too close to reality. Maybe that's the reason.
Oh, I think it absolutely is. Bill, I'm going to have to start bringing you to the end of the program because we do stop 5 minutes to the hour.
Okay.
I have to introduce my guests for next week, but I want to give you a chance to confirm your website address in case anyone couldn't get that down quick enough. And perhaps if you have any final message for our listeners.
Well, I've enjoyed so much in talking to you and enjoyed it. And
right.
I thank you, and I like the little accent there, too, a very appealing accent. Spindrift, by the word, is a nautical term. It has to do with the curve of a wave. So when you look at the picture of our wave on Spindrift and on a book, that's Spindrift. We are on the internet at www.spindriftresearch.org, spindriftresearch.org. I am Bill Sweet. My book is A Journey into Prayer. You can look it up on Amazon or my publisher, exlibris.com, and you can get through the website there. And it's hard and soft cover. The thing I'd like to leave you with is that when we pray, make sure that we're not trying to manipulate the situation with how we want to have it eventuate. It's very hard to do, but that is the way to pray. And also, to get the noise out of the way, shut yourself off from as much noise and interference around you. Like I was telling you, that's the secret of prayer. Pray in secret. Don't let people in on your thoughts. Pray out loud and let people in. Not a good idea.
Thank you very much for your advice, and it was very pleasant and indeed very interesting to have you on the program. I did enjoy the interview with you. So thank you very much, Bill. I will now announce my guest for next Friday, who is Michelle Avanti. She is a professional certified astrologer. She's a consulting metaphysical minister. She has taught classes in meditation, dream interpretation, astrology, and so on. Quite a very experienced lady. So I'm looking forward to that. Thank you for being with me today. I hope you can be with me next week. God bless you all. Thank you.